curiosity.
What are you so curious about?
Everything.
Mr. Curiosity.
All right, folks, I am Mr. Curiosity, otherwise known as who, gentlemen?
Joe Snedeker.
Joe Snedeker? What?
Is that you, Joe? Yeah,
who are these strange men here in the background? Well, Mr. Curiosity is curious this week about Cooper's Seafood. Not just the evolution of the restaurant, but the name, the faces, the gentlemen, ladies too, who started this whole thing, where it's going, where it's been, and why you support St. Joe's, and why there's a big octopus on your building, and all the famous people that went there. I want to know it all. So are you ready to begin?
We have 3 hours.
Yeah, we have to do this. We have to do this in like 45 minutes. Can it be done?
Certainly
I believe
can.
It can.
So right here in front of me, we have the great Jack Cooper and the great Mark Cooper.
Thank you, Joe.
So I want to start by saying, how many Coopers are there? I don't even know the answer to that.
There are eight of us, eight children.
There's eight?
I'm the oldest.
Offspring of the same two people.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yep.
And you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest. Jack's the second oldest.
And our what's the rest here? We have
four other brothers and six sisters.
Yeah, six boys, two girls.
See, already Mr. Curiosity is learning. I didn't know this. Now, this is, I hope not an uncomfortable question, but is everyone still alive and well?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
Alive and well.
We live a long time.
Yeah.
We live a long time.
Longevity lives in the family.
At 98. My mom just passed away at 93.
Are you serious?
And, yep. We're like cockroaches. Uncles, hard to get rid of
the uncles were like, they all died of like miner's asthma, but they're 80, so they survived that long with the...
I like where you started with the two parents in their 90s. So let's go back. Where did they come from? What is their origin? Where did their parents come from? Hit me, baby.
Well, Mark is he's a good historian with the Cooper family.
All right, so Mark, let's go back. Where are your great-grandparents?
Great-grandparents came from Lithuania, both sides.
Both sides Lithuania.
Yeah, both sides from Lithuania. Let's see,
somewhere in the 1800s, late
1800s? Yeah, late 1800s. Actually, but both of my grandfathers, I have a cousin in Texas that is a genealogist, actually, and he's done a lot with the family. And he said that a lot of the people that they lived in Wilkes-Barre, Georgetown area of Wilkes-Barre, but a lot of the young men, and there was a whole pile of young men that came in that were all like in their early 20s, late teens, early 20s, that immigrated about the same time. And what they were doing was escaping the Russian draft. They were for the Russo-Japanese War. So they were Russian draft dodgers, basically.
So is this like Bolshevik-Menshevik's time? I don't even know. Like
Before that. It was the Tsar. They were conscripting all the small countries. They ran all the Baltic states, and they was conscripting all the young men for the war with Japan, the Russo-Japanese War of 1905. So most of those young guys, they skedaddled and came to America, then sent for the families later on.
See, you helped me understand my heritage then. Not that I want to branch into this, but I always wonder because my grandparents, Slovakia.
Mm-hmm.
But I always think, and I know America was the place to be, but why did they all leave? Why was everyone leaving? Weren't things...
At that time, yes, it was basically to escape the war.
And America was the land of milk and honey, too.
I know, opportunity in the world and all that.
And there were some family members.
I get that, but I'm still thinking, it must have been pretty nice in Eastern Europe. Why not hang out and... Get your jobs done, no?
Well, everyone was under a collective. They were peasants, They were basically peasants, and it was a land of opportunity. So I know that my grandfather, when he came over here, his brother came over first, and he had a rooming house down in Glen Lyon, I believe. And my grandmother came over. She was just a young girl, came over by herself, and she worked. Well, no, she didn't come over by herself. She came over with her brothers. But she worked for... my grandfather's brother, and that's how he met her. And they got married, and they moved to Georgetown, which is a little suburb of Wilkes-Barre, by the Giants Despair Hill.
Okay. And this is all when? This is like
early 1900s.
Scranton's booming. Wilkes-Barre's booming. There's no restaurant
in the mines.
In Scranton yet.
They're in the mines.
Yes.
They're miners.
So who are these people then? That reproduced and made you guys.
Okay.
Do they start the restaurant or what? I don't know the answer to
this.
Well, Uncle Frank
actually started the restaurant, right?
Frank was the oldest son.
All right, so here you have your father's brother.
Yep.
Yes?
Father's oldest brother.
Father's oldest brother. What's your father doing at the time?
My father was a, my father was a loom mechanic. He worked in the silk mills.
He was down in Jersey, right? Working in Jersey.
Well, that was before the war. He worked down there. But before that, he worked up here. He worked at the Johnny Silk Mill.
And his brother?
Frank and my dad were the two that were not miners. Never went in the mines. My uncle Frank.
Why, they
up,
too good? They're elitists? they were too smart for that?
My uncle Frank was a great mechanic. And I guess he wound up getting a job in the mines, and
didn't he start organizing the miners?
He was a union organizer initially, and he got blackballed. Couldn't get a job, so he changed. He took my grandmother's name and kind of Americanized it. Was Cooper's, changed it to Cooper.
Cooper's.
Cooper's.
K-U-P-R-I-S.
So already we know where the name comes from.
Yeah,
see,
exactly. So he Americanized it to Cooper, and he got a job working in the silk mills, but he wound up opening his own business at the time because he was such a mechanical business. Great mechanic. He wound up inventing something, the way that they took a home-based business, which was weaving these rag rugs. And he took these looms and he mechanized it.
This is Uncle Frank now?
This is Uncle Frank. Right. Well, he turned this into he wound up having a giant rug manufacturing business. He had the offices
in
California.
In North Scranton.
Junior High School.
So where are we now? Early 1900s? There's a big rug man
Frank,
in Scranton.
Frank did this probably around the wartime, right before the war, probably in the late 30s.
Okay, so my dad and my other uncle,
they were down in Jersey working before the war. Because there was no real work around here. They didn't want to go in the mines. The mines were actually petering out at the time, too.
Yeah.
There wasn't always work. My grandfather would be laid off here and there.
But see, this is how I want to know the beginning of things. So your Uncle Frank, mechanic, starts a business selling carpets, rugs, whatever.
Right.
Braided
my
rugs,
grandfather stayed in the mines. No business. No nothing.
Yep.
I mean, that one bifurcation changes everything.
Exactly. I think what made him do that
and my grandfather just say this
also
is that
happened
to
get them out of the mines with my Uncle Tony, which was the second, he was the second,
was the third youngest. Behind Frank, wasn't he?
Tony was behind Frank, yeah. He got killed. He was 27 years old, and he got killed in an explosion in the mines. It was right around Easter time he was in, and somehow the dynamite he was setting went off and blew him up.
This is Frank's.
This Frank's
is
brother.
Frank's yep. brother.
My
so
dad's,
another one
my
of your
dad's
uncles.
Brother.
Yes.
Okay. So he was 27 years old, and I think that's what kind of flattened out the desire to keep working in the mines. So
oh,
they,
I see. Okay. So there's a
so
little
they impetus. Wound up. Yeah, they wound up doing something different, and
well,
Frank wound
that's
up very
an example
successful.
Of. Crisis sometimes produces opportunity.
Absolutely.
Here's a crisis that made someone...
He invented that machine to make the braided rug, Uncle Frank did.
He mechanized it.
So is this what Frank's doing for decades and making tons of money?
And he made lots of... He became a multimillionaire.
He didn't.
Yeah, he had offices in New York, Chicago,
LA,
San Francisco.
Oh, Frank.
Yeah, Frank Cooper.
Big rug man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Big
I don't believe this. Do people know this?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of people that work for him.
I think the older generation might know, but a lot of them are passed on.
I remember when I joined the Knights of Columbus at one point, and some of the older guys were like, "Oh my God!" He said, "Oh, your Uncle Frank was great. He used to bring everybody down here and treat everybody. No one ever had to pay for anything."
He actually started the Lithuanian Club up in North Scranton. The Taurus Club.
Is that right?
Yep. Frank started that.
And how much younger is your dad than Frank?
Let's see. Frank was born in 1904.
Just
my dad was
years,
born
right?
in 17. So what?
13 years.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
So did your dad then say, "Give me some money, Frank. Give me some of your tens."
No, Frank was not that generous with the family.
No,
he was tough with the family.
But he stayed in the carpet business. Right.
Yes, he did. Yeah, my dad worked for him. Then when my dad came back from World War II, my dad.
Oh wait. So now your dad goes to World War II.
My dad was drafted.
He's at 18, 19, whatever.
Older than that.
He was 41, so he was born in 17, 20, 23,
okay.
20, 24.
So he's in his 20s. His older brother's making tons of money.
Yep.
He's like, "I got to do this. I got to serve my country. I'm going."
World War II started. He went in the Army. My Uncle Joe went in the Navy, which we have pictures of my Uncle Joe on D-Day on his LCI.
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Very, very interesting. My Uncle Bill wound up at the Conservation Corps, right? Well, he was in the CC camps. He was in the Civilian Conservation Corps as a young man. Money for the family. You know, he got to work. There was no work around. And He was an absolute bull of a guy. He was a cable splicer. He used to splice the cables for the submarine nets and the ship cables. They couldn't get women. We're not strong enough to do that job. At the time, I guess they probably were. But anyway, it was a man's job, and it was a defense job. So they needed him there. So he had Popeye arms. The guy had arms like this. I saw my brother-in-law and I try to move a 50-gallon drum that was buried in the mud in the water in our dock in Canada.
Yeah.
We couldn't move it. Here's this old guy, and it's like 60-some years old at the time. He goes on there by himself, pulls this thing out by himself. Like, I said, oh, my God, I never want him to touch me.
The greatest like, generation.
Oh,
now.
My
you know
God,
why,
what,
right?
What a man.
But what I don't get, if Uncle Frank had this big business making tons of money, why didn't all of your uncles and his brothers just
well,
say,
did.
Oh, we're going to work
they
for
did.
The
did. Uncle Frank employed
well, they did.
Them all
after
then.
The war,
oh, he employed
after
them all.
After
the
war.
But they all, yep. We got to go serve back. Our country. They come
after
back.
After they came back, they all worked for Frank.
Yep.
Big. And then my Uncle Frank wound up with the... The restaurant was originally started by Stanley Andres, Leo Parrish, and Bill Lochran. Three
friends,
guys.
Just some
three guys
the
who wound up the
Coupe,
diners.
Yeah,
the original
railroad
diners.
Station.
Yeah.
All right, so wait. No, there's a little railroad station.
That's
like a little original restaurant.
Which was a restaurant.
Where it is now?
It became a restaurant in 1941.
Who are these guys to your...
The three guys that opened it?
Mark
yeah.
Knows
just
them,
friends?
Sure.
No, they were... Well, Stanley Andres, who had Andres Diner down on the Washington Avenue. Leo Parrish, who had the Parrish Diner up on Route 6.
Okay.
And Bill Lochran, who had a bunch of bars in Scranton. They got out of the business because they wanted to open diners. At the end of the war, figured they were going to make a killing on all the GIs coming home. That was the hot thing to do. So they sold the business to a guy named George Lavelle.
Okay.
George Lavelle wanted partners with my Uncle Frank. And then...
Uncle Frank comes back from the war.
No, Uncle Frank Frank never was in the war. He was the businessman.
He's the businessman.
I think he had contracts, government contracts too. So,
this Lavelle guy says, Frank, you want to go in on this?
No, one? I think Uncle Frank got in a card game. Didn't you say?
George Lavelle lost half the restaurant to my Uncle Frank in a card game, poker game.
So that's how Frank started.
When my dad comes back from the war. But he sends my dad down to run the business.
Frank.
Now, John, our father knew nothing about the restaurant business. So my Uncle Frank
Frank have an interest in the business or no?
No.
He's
just running the card game.
He's doing his other thing.
Yeah, he has the rug mill. He's got places all over the country.
He may have won this in a card game.
Yeah, yes. But then he tells my father, go into the restaurant business. My father knew absolutely nothing about the restaurant business, so he starts in the restaurant business.
And this is what, late 40s?
48.
48.
Yeah.
The other brothers get in at the same time too. They all bowed into the restaurant.
So it was a four-way partnership.
Four-way partnership.
Frank, Bill, Joe, and John. Our father, John.
Four-way partnership.
So let's go to your dad now. He's married.
Mark was born.
What was he doing right before your uncle made him go into this? He was
a little mechanic. He was working.
Oh, he was still a mechanic.
He worked for Frank as a mechanic.
Yep. He's got any kids at this point, or he? Maybe?
Frank has a...
No, your dad.
No,
my
Mark
dad.
Was born in 1950.
I was born in 50.
Okay.
So I was the first one there.
So you're born in 50.
Right.
There's a restaurant in existence with your dad and his brothers.
Yes.
Right.
And it's a small little place.
Small.
Right.
Only the small original
place. It was always
bar
a seafood restaurant.
Yeah.
Always was a seafood restaurant.
And it was called something else at the time? Or
it was Andres.
Andres
at first, and then the changed out after that.
And I didn't see pictures, but I'm sure they exist. What does this look like? Describe this thing.
It's the original place. We have pictures at Cooper's now. But for those listening, maybe it's the flat, long building.
I mean, just a,
no, no, if you come to Cooper's in the hallway, there's all the pictures. It morphs, you know, even on our menu.
Oh, I know. I've seen it. Okay.
Yeah, seen the original building. It looks like an old train station is what it was, you know?
When we actually remodeled, we were doing the kitchen. We pulled the walls down. There were railroad rails and there is support
Get
for
out.
Steel. Instead of just using steel, they used rails as part of the supports.
So your dad learns the business.
Learns
your
the
mom
business.
Working
very,
there too at
He was
the
a
time?
Good accountant. He was a good
My father was a
numbers
great,
guy. Yeah.
Great numbers guy, great accountant. He was
a people person, too. People.
Yeah, Dad was. He was a real outgoing guy. My
like
dad
you
just
guys,
loved,
though. I'm instantly
my
attracted
dad loved
to you.
Like,
I don't even know why.
My dad
we don't either.
I want to be around you guys, and I don't know why, so this must be just something in the air with
the rest of our brothers and sisters. It's the same.
It's woven into your DNA.
When the Coopers get together, we have quite the parties. Yeah.
So then this thing starts moving and grooving. You guys are born. It's in the 50s now.
Mark's born in 50. I'm born in 52. Yeah.
52. Colette's born in 53. Great. Yeah.
But at the time, is it making, this is a big deal, or is it still just an average?
Oh, the restaurant is just, they're just scraping
by.
They're just getting by. My dad was fortunate. He had some good people to work for him. He had The original head chef was Vincenzo Tarantino, who was...
From Italy, right?
From Italy. He had actually studied at Escoffier in France. He spoke about six or seven languages.
Get out.
He could speak Greek, he could speak Lebanese, he could speak Spanish.
That's the guy we trained.
This guy was the head chef. Where does he come from? Is your dad finds him? Or?
When he came from New York, he came to Scranton and he worked at PJ's.
Because this was the place to be. Scranton,
this was a hot place. PJ's was a big place. He used to be in the window carving the roasts and stuff. And at the time, there was a place called Brennan's Bar. The bar was a full block long between Wyoming and Washington Avenue.
Gotcha.
The bar was the entire length of the block. All the sailors and soldiers, and I was coming back from war. It was the hot place to be. You know, they had different bartenders all the way down this line. Well, PJ's was across the street. Great place to eat. Well, after the war, my dad got, or maybe it was Stanley, or not Stanley, but
what year was this
George Lavelle. Vince wound up there early, right around the time Dad wound up in there. So around 48 or so, he wound up coming in. I think George Lavelle knew him, and he got him to work for him. And he and my dad just formed a bond. I mean, my one brother Jim, his middle name
was Vince.
So he's
coming up with the meals and everything.
Original recipes came from Vince Tarantino.
Clam chowder recipe was from Vince. Our rice pudding recipes that.
What's his heritage? Did you tell me that?
He's Italian.
Yeah, he was Italian. Fought in World War One.
So now we're mixing Lithuania.
And
we're throwing in Italy.
McDermott was one of our head bartenders. He was as Irish as the day is long.
Now we're bringing in Irish. Ireland.
He was so funny.
He worked
best
in the Poconos back
in
the time. And he also worked at Brennan's, you know.
But don't you guys see what's happening? It's this melting of different parts of the world.
You know,
it
was Providence that he had such great people that he would have gone under had it not been for these people all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
they became his fast friends, and they took care of Dad also.
They really
did.
As he took care of them also. Yeah. I mean, Jerry, we wound up friends with his son. We were like another brother. Dad couldn't go to Canada with us, or Jerry couldn't go, so we would take Jim with us. We'd go fishing.
McDermott's son became one of my best friends, yeah.
All right, so is your mom involved? Is she like a waitress?
At one point, she started baking for us. She wanted to bake in the worst way. And then
She was a hostess originally, back in the 50s.
She wanted to bake, Joe, but then she didn't realize that it wasn't just baking two pies. And then we'd be like, oh, Mom, we need like 10 coconut custards, 10 lemon meringue.
Gotcha.
After about a year or two, she got a little tired of that, didn't she, Mark?
She said, too much.
Of course, she had 8 kids. I mean, I don't know why she was tired.
Well, I was going to say, what's it like at home, though? So you got all these kids. Is she bossy?
My mother was.
Father bossing her around. She's bossing your father.
Our parents were the best. They were phenomenal.
They had such a great relationship.
Is that right?
A loving.
Absolutely.
We grew up in a great home. Yep.
I mean,
great home.
You couldn't pick a better family.
We had no money, but we had love like crazy.
But why do you say that right there? If the restaurant's doing good, or
it was just getting by. There were four partners. Don't forget. So anything that came out of the restaurant was split.
All the profits were shared four ways, and it wasn't booming.
I think you're just trying to be modest, and you really grew up rich kids with everything.
I wish. we used to take out the garbage for all the neighbors, and my father wouldn't let us take a dime. We couldn't even take a dime. We had to do it for nothing.
Well, that's my dad.
Shovel the sidewalks.
Catholic school. We were going to St. Paul's, and a lot of the kids were getting allowances. I said to my father, I said, you know, Jeannie Swift is getting a quarter a week allowance. He said, I'll give you an allowance. He said, I allow you to make all the money you want. And that wasn't really the answer I was looking for, you know. He said, I'll give you a couple of hints.
And yeah, he gave us a job when we were 10 years old washing dishes, and we paid us like $2.75 for the night, but he didn't give it to us. He put it in a bank account, which we couldn't access until
Come on, that's the truth. These might be the ingredients, though, how to make good human beings that we don't follow anymore. I used to collect rags.
I used to go around to the neighbors and ask anybody if they had old rags, because rags were 2 cents a pound. I used to take my wagon and go up to Honig's Junkyard at the top of
Newark. Or collect cans. We collect all the cans and go to the junkyard.
See? So this Grass, the value of hard work. You weren't spoiled kids.
No.
Learned the value of a dollar.
Yep. And so now you're 10, you're 12, you're going through puberty, you're in high school. What's happening?
We're working at the restaurant.
Working at the
dishwasher. Me and Mark
constantly
started together.
Always working. Every time the phone would ring.
But did you say, Dad, I need a job? Or did he say, you're working?
No, he just told us.
That's what you're doing.
No.
What if you said, I want a paper route instead?
How about when we start dating, though? We start dating and Dad would say,
do you bring the girls home?
No, first of all, if you wanted to go on a date, he would say, tell me where you're going to be. So we're going to be at the bowling. I said, well, if I paid you, you better come to work. And how many times would be out bowling, like, paging Jack Cooper? I'm like,
come on.
Darn, I got to. He'd be on the phone. Dishwasher didn't show up. You got to come. We went.
So he tough guy, but you're saying it's not like.
No, he wasn't mean.
No, not mean. But he was stressed. He ran that restaurant himself. It was just.
He did everything himself.
So he was always there.
He was always there.
Yeah, he worked.
Yes.
He worked 8 days.
Were you going to say like a workaholic type? Or if you said, Dad, let's go on a weekend, let's go fishing.
We'd go to Canada with them. He'd always take us to Canada. That was our only vacations ever.
Sunday, because we were closed on Sundays, we always went. My grandmother had a cottage at Harvey's Lake.
Well, Mark, we worked first on Sunday mornings, remember?
Oh, yeah, first.
We went to work at like 6.
Go to church first.
Church, work.
Go to work.
Then Harvey's Lake.
Then Harvey's Lake.
Grandma out there.
Catholic family.
Catholic, yeah.
And Father, then, Son, Holy Ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah, amen. Amen, amen, I say to thee. Yeah, we were always going to go to church.
Isn't that everybody?
And we dressed up the little hats. Remember, that was a riot. The girls are all dressed up.
So now we're high school. You're thinking about a career. What are you doing now? You're 18.
Well, all the family, everybody had to work in the restaurant. So as we
all worked. Yeah.
So you never
went
thought,
the dishwashing,
though,
the busing.
I said, I'm never going to do this because it's,
me too.
It's weekends.
I wanted out.
Long nights. It's hot. When everyone else is off, you're working.
Well, I was going to say, here's what the dilemma is for a lot of businesses. Once the kids get to a certain age, they either kind of rebel and say, I'm not doing this. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be a teacher. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to go to welding school. Well, or some are indoctrinated into the family business. Where were you guys going at the time?
I want to know. I really didn't want any part of it.
Nor did I.
You did not?
I went to college. No. I wound up
So you're 18. You go to where are you going?
Penn State.
Penn State.
Went for engineering. And after 2 years, I got a job. I took an application with DuPont. And I got offered the job on the spot. They flew me out to Parkersburg. They offered me the job on the spot, and they said, well, you can go to college. I was paying for my own college.
Wait a minute. The old man's making money at the restaurant. He's not paying for your college.
No, we paid for everything ourselves.
What year was that,
like 68? 68. No, we pay for our own everything.
So the fact that you majored in engineering, though, you guys are all pretty fluent in math. It comes easy for you? Or?
Yeah, fairly. After 2 years, I mean, they told me, well, they'll pay for anything. Marietta State's right across
DuPont
the river.
DuPont said that.
Yeah, they said, all you got to do is pass the courses, we'll pay for them. I thought, wow. And I was going to be starting off at twice what my dad was making.
Is that right?
Yeah. At the time, I thought,
So we're talking when now?
1970, that was.
So it's 1970. Oh, the restaurant got to be doing pretty good, or no?
No, I think it's just...
It was plodding along.
Plodding along, yeah.
Nothing really great yet.
See, that's what I'm curious about.
Well, I got drafted. I dropped my first draft lottery. I think my number was 184, 186. And I thought, I knew all these guys that were going earlier on. I mean, I had wanted to enlist initially right after high school. I wanted to enlist in the Navy with my brother-in-law now. And we were going to go into the buddy plan. And my dad said, no, I don't want you to go to Vietnam. And I don't want you to go anywhere. Because he said, I've been there. Because my dad was at Anzio.
He went through Italy, Austria, and Germany.
He was in Iraq training for the invasion of Sicily, then in Iraq. What's Iraq now?
Yeah. So he's trying to
dissuade us from going to war.
He wanted us to go to college.
I would guess you would say, Korea, I'm not going to do that. There's a lot of rebellion at the time. Why would you want to go? Mark didn't know
he was going to Korea. He thought he was going to go to Vietnam. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And then at the last second, they took you into.
But you were welcoming that, you're saying. This is.
Well, I mean, once I was in the service, I wanted to be in the service. I wanted to do it, but I didn't. That was not exactly the plan how it went. Anyway, when I came back.
You're what, 22?
Yeah, 22.
22.
22.
You come back.
I come back. The job was still there, but my dad said a bartender was sick. He said, can you fill in for a little bit before
DuPont job was still there.
Yeah. They have to take you back.
Oh,
they
have
to. It was that one of those things. Well, I started working behind the bar, and I loved it. And so I went to took a couple of courses down at LCC. And it was one day, they
for like
offered
bartending
this course one
or?
Time. No, it was all about the history of alcohol. Basically, of
Mark how knows a lot about alcohol. Let me tell
anything,
you.
Anything you want to know about boozer?
Anything you want to know about?
He's pretty good at it. He was anyway.
Anything you want to know about? I can tell you how they're made, who made them, how they blended.
But you're in your 20s, you're bartending. Your dad's in his 40s. Your parents are running the restaurant. And you say, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Where are you, Big Daddy? Where's Big Jack?
I was at the University of Scranton. I was going to be a doctor. So I was in pre-med.
See, you guys are high-level thinkers, then. You just don't get accepted to the U for pre-med if your board scores were great. You're quick learners. Everything comes easy to you.
Yep, we did very well.
So you guys must just be superior carbon units here at Brown. That's the bottom line. No, you are.
I don't know about that.
And then you're at the U, and what happens? You're thinking...
I hurt my knee. I blew out my knee, so I was behind a semester. So I didn't graduate with my class. I graduated 6 months afterwards. And I decided I had a friend out in Las Vegas. And I was going to go to medical school, but then I wasn't going to go until the following year. So I had like a whole 6-8 months to kill. So I went out to Las Vegas and met this friend out there, and we opened a restaurant out there.
No, you did not.
Yeah. It was called the Gin Mill. Yeah, it was a bar restaurant.
You guys,
I was there for about 6 months in the highway department. I was only a working partner now. And I went to Vegas, and I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, unbelievable, coming from Scranton.
Yeah,
small,
you liked it.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, it was.
Was it successful? Or?
It was very successful. The highway department came through, and they bought the place out. So my friend then was a big deal in the Sands Hotel. He was a pit boss, and he got me into a dealing school.
Boss.
So then I... dealt cards for about another 6 months out there.
And how old are you at the time?
About 22.
So this is 70s?
Yeah, 76.
Mm-hmm. 76. Yep. I'm just trying to, I'm 10 years old. I'm in elementary school. You guys are...
I'm wondering what Dad was doing. You were still back here. I was in Vegas, and you had to come back already. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Briefly, though, I don't want to kill the whole podcast here, but so what are your siblings doing? They're all going to college, too, or they're all...
Yeah, Colette was in East Stroudsburg.
East Stroudsburg teaching.
Then Paul was at,
Penn State, then he went to Virginia Tech for, he wound up getting a master's in agriculture from Virginia Tech.
So we have all these...
He worked for the Virginia Seafood Industry.
But you see what I'm saying here? We have all these educated people. Your father is killing the restaurant, making money, starting his own business, expanding. The Coopers are like,
well,
I don't
at that
know,
point, the restaurant was still, it was still the small restaurant. There was nothing, it was only that small bar.
Okay,
and small,
so let's jump to the big change then. When
well,
did
then
that
we
happen?
Decided, there well, was at one point we decided, we started. We started getting busier. We were changing things. Jack came back. He came back from Vegas.
Jack's back.
I came back.
You're not doing DuPont. You're bartending.
I'm bartending. I'm running the bar. And things are starting to get busy. We're starting to change.
It's what? Late 70s, near 80.
I came back because I didn't Vegas was too hot. It was not. It wasn't Scranton. It really was. It was great for a tourist place. But
some girl brought you back. Admit it.
You're right. It was.
How
the hell did you know
it's
that?
Because that's always that's
okay,
the motivation.
Okay, so I came back. Yeah, with a girl.
But then we started. Jack went over, started writing new menus. We started going through all this stuff.
So you're in the business. And just the two of you are everybody.
We're doing all these. I'm going to
different
schools.
It was me,
schools.
Mark, and my father at that point.
Okay, at that point.
Yeah. I'm going to different schools, learning different things about the seafood industry and all that. And
Mark Jack took over the bar. I took over the kitchen.
Jack makes these great connections up in Boston and all that. We start getting into the, because we've all been environmentalists. So
we remember, Joe, at this point, we were still buying small town. We were buying off Scranton Fish Small, like, you know, paying top dollar for everything. So then we got into it. I decided, okay, we're going to start buying out of New York. We put big freezers in our basement. We bought the warehouse behind us, put a big, massive freezer in that. Then we start buying direct. So we cut out all the middlemen. And I start buying out of Boston, all fresh fish coming in 3 times a week. Lobster tails.
So big step up, reputation spreads.
Yeah. And the money we
started
were paying,
sending
was a lot
the place
cheaper.
We were buying from. We were sending all of our chefs up to do these seafood courses to learn about. Actually, the place we used to buy from started the HACCP program for the seafood industry. The government asked Steve Connolly to show them what to do.
Yeah.
So he was the forerunner of all this HACCP stuff with the industry. So we were in there from the ground floor. We'd send all of our chefs up to take the courses on seafood and
everybody
all that.
Learned that and the right way to do things. You know, we'd put big steel bins in our coolers. All the fish would be iced down, taken care of. Nothing would left to... Back in the day, I mean, a lot of people weren't... They didn't know how to handle seafood.
It wasn't really like... There's so many different things about that. Yeah.
That's a whole other story.
My hand is a graph where the steady progress of Cooper's 70s. When does it take that big jump up? This is like mid-80s.
Late 70s. Around 1980, we were already starting to rock.
Now there's expansion. There's octopi going on. When did all that happen?
First thing we did, Joe, was we added that whale room. We needed seating, so we added the room behind... the original restaurant.
But who's the guy who says that? Let's put a whale room.
Well, we
needed
seats. We had waiting lines of like an hour, 2 hours every night. It was massive. We couldn't handle a business. I mean, we needed more seats.
But basically the three or four of you, you, two, your
me, Mark, and my
mother
dad
and father.
And then when did Paul come in?
Paul came in.
So Paul's another brother.
Yeah, another brother.
Paul came
He's
back from Virginia, and then we needed help. We were really, really busy. So
that's probably early.
There's lines.
Early
there's
age.
Expansion.
Yes,
where do you get the big whale? Or is that a whole different subject?
That's another one of our friends who worked in Epcot.
He says we got an old whale.
No, he made that.
He
we
made
wanted
that
the,
thing.
We yeah. wanted the whale because we wanted something. We were always a little nutty.
That's what I was going to say. That step. Yeah. I want to know about that step. You sit down one day and think, let's get a big drink.
We'd sit down in the back room. Remember the big round table? We'd all sit down and we'd all pour us up a couple beers.
So let's get a big whale.
Let's think of what we could do that's nutty for Scranton.
And how much for something like that? Or is that rude? That's got to be
$50,000. I have no idea, Joe. I can't remember.
It was built by Mark.
He built it off premise.
Back in the warehouse.
Just some guy you know.
No, he's a friend of ours.
He's a resident artist.
Yeah.
He was on the payroll. How do you build a whale that's like life size? I don't
understand.
Yeah,
this guy won all kind of contests even in high school. He's still there.
He's working for us now. We're going to redo the front of the restaurant and make it look like a seaport. That's the next thing. I should have brought the mock-up for this.
But how do you, if someone said build a whale, like I wouldn't even, is it paper mache? Is it, I don't know.
It's actually, it's styrofoam, actually.
A lot of styrofoam and then the fiberglass. Yeah.
I don't know. You guys are just impressive to me. All right. So now it's taken off. You're with the business. Are you guys getting married now, or what's the deal? Is it in the 80s?
Okay. Yeah,
you're having kids? I don't know.
70s.
Yeah, I got married in 75.
Okay. So you're married now.
I got married in 78.
You're walking around with $100 bills falling out of your
pocket. No way.
Yes, you are. You're buying Cadillacs.
No, we never.
You're flying to Key West every weekend.
No. We invested our money.
Yeah. So it goes back into the business.
Yeah, we kept
And actually, at that point, I had become a pilot. I was a skydiver. And I had it.
Who am I hanging out with here?
This is like the late,
now all of a sudden
late
I'm a
70s,
pilot.
And we still weren't doing all that great. And I just loved flying. So I was looking around. I had accepted a job if I wanted it to go to Alaska to be a bush pilot. And my wife found out that she said that we're not going out. She found out she was pregnant with our second child. She said, "That's it. We're not. Just, no way are we going to Alaska. I don't know anybody up there."
That wouldn't have worked.
No, it wouldn't have worked. I probably would have killed myself in that plane up there.
So, I feel like I'm hanging out with like the Eisenhowers or something. I mean, bush pilots, engineering, whales, additions, pre-med. I mean, what?
My parents weren't too happy when I didn't go to medical school.
They weren't too happy.
Yeah, a little postscript on that one. Yeah. They didn't like that.
This is like Howard Hughes. I mean, what? This is eccentric big living.
No, so we put the whale room on anyway.
Okay.
And we filled that thing up. That was then
that was an
immediate success.
What year is that?
That was 82.
Okay. Because I'm trying. This isn't about me in any way, but I'm trying to place my life with what's going on here. So I'm still in high school, and you guys are doing all this. And I remember when I was in high school that there's a prom, if there's a big event, let's go to Cooper's. So that's all I'm saying. So already, I see you guys as this mammoth thing in Scranton.
We were just working. We were a working guy.
Everything we made, we plowed back into the business because
we kept working.
Everything we had, we were paying off debt.
Yeah, you
know.
The money's rolling in. You're expanding. You're married. Kids at the time?
Yeah.
You're having kids?
I had two children. Mark had two children.
And now it's deeper into the 80s. Do we have the octopus on the roof? Have the expansion?
That's when we started the idea to make the ship.
That was in 85.
So the ship comes in the mid-80s.
85, 86, actually.
86. We built that, and then we built that addition, that link.
How do you get that done? Do you guys do that? I mean...
No, we.
Do you just hire guys?
That's a long, long story.
Brief. I mean, it's just a.
Well, we hired a contractor.
To do them.
Had an architect.
Does he look at you and you? I don't know if I can do that. I mean, is he giving you that kind of stuff?
No. We did the architect. But that was Phil.
Phil Clark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phil Clark came in. He was great. Let's do this.
They loved the challenge, and I think it was pretty good for them. As a matter of fact, the one guy who was involved with Phil Clark just recently contacted my son. He said, I did that. I got so much work off of that job.
Oh, is that right?
I was the one who designed the ship, and I forget the gentleman's name, but he wanted the original blueprints, and I said, well, I have been in the warehouse somewhere.
They were prints from an actual sailing vessel.
Yeah. That they
took
here.
They took, it was an actually fishing boat, and what they did is they just blew it up. Blew it up and
get
expanded
out.
It.
But we had tons of problems because the ship obviously was curved, so everything had to be made specifically to fit that, the booth. We didn't realize the amount of money we had to put into that.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
That was a money pit to start,
a restaurant. That's what I'm saying. A restaurant wants to put an addition on. You can do this for 50, 100 grand. Oh, a nice little deck. Or you can do this for a half a million, for 1.5 million. You just see what I mean? To say, let's do that, is a big decision.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
That's what. So these are the steps that lead to this iconic thing we now know in Scranton. So now it's the 80s. When does all that stuff appear on the walls? You just collected it along the way from your grandfather.
Happened was originally when we first built the whale room, the architect, that was David LeYoung.
Right.
We did it. It was all modern and it looked great and no one wanted to sit in there.
Why?
It wasn't junked up enough.
It was too sterile. It was too.
Oh, he didn't have
a not a warm, homey feel.
No, there was no whale or nothing like that. It was just booths and it was the
very sterile. We came up with the idea with the whale, and then
we need to put stuff on the walls.
Where do you get all that?
Yeah.
We were collectors since we were kids.
Gotcha.
And then we put it. I think Paul put the ad, or you put the ad in the paper.
It was wanted sea creatures. We put it in the Scranton Times. So people were bringing in all kind of fish.
All amounts.
You can't believe.
And you'd pay for that, or they just dumped it out?
Some of it we paid for, and some of it we just
donated. Most of it was all donated, just people wanted to have their
stuff.
And we put
their names on it, you know. And
that is totally amazing.
A lot of those mounted fish. Two of the marlin were... Marlin that my dad and my uncle caught on. They used to go deep sea fishing every year down in Nag's Head. And on the one trip, they caught these two marlin and had them mounted. My dad said he would never do it again because it cost him more money to get those two marlin mounted than the whole trip cost him boat tails, rail, everything for the two fish.
Oh, man.
So we junked up the whale room. And then people liked it much better. They like the
It just
the
like
stalk.
Being there, something about it.
Well, then Paul came with Mark Buck.
He became friends with Mark Buck, yeah.
Who's this guy?
Who's another collector in Scranton.
Okay, gotcha.
He was a fireman and recently passed away. Great guy.
Great guy. Yeah. Scranton memorabilia.
Well, what goes with the memorabilia, I guess, are all these famous people coming there too at the time? Like if someone visited Scranton, if it's Nixon, I don't know if it's...
Well, they started off with Eisenhower visited early on when my dad was still there. It was the first real famous person. Then we had a litany of people start coming in. I mean, it was one after another.
Why? Just because the reputation spread? And if you're in this area, that's the place to be.
I guess. I don't even know.
We used to get all the wrestlers down for the CYC.
Oh,
is that right?
Oh,
Andre
the Giant.
Chief J. Strongbow. Andre the Giant. What are he? Like
Chief J. Strongbow.
He was the best, yeah. They used to beat him to a pulp. And then he would come back with a vengeance. And they'd play that Indian stuff. And he'd get up on a death door.
I know. I saw him down there.
And he'd come back and then he'd win. But he came in.
Ivan Putski.
Ivan Putski, Andre the Giant.
They were all there at your place.
Oh, yeah. Andre ate three plates of spaghetti and he ate four devil crabs. He was like, that was an eating machine.
Oh, are you serious?
I think he took a case of beer while he said.
But you guys were what at the time? 20s? I don't know. 30s? Like, you remember that, though. That was probably pretty cool.
I was in high school. I think I was only in high school.
Oh.
Because they had the wrestling at the CYC.
Well, I was going to say, that was in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't remember.
But anyway, so these guys are all going there.
Yeah.
Did you... Like rock stars, movie stars. Give me a good story. Anybody like that sticks out?
Actually, when we had Tinks, you had a lot of them.
Oh, see, that's a whole different.
The nightclub was a whole. You had a lot of stars down there. But I know, like, who came at the Cooper's?
Well, the Clintons, of course. We had the president.
Yeah, but you say, of course. I didn't realize that because I'm ignorant to this whole thing. So they were there.
Hillary Clinton was there. She had her dad's after funeral at our place.
Oh, and see, Bill okay, I had forgotten that.
Sure, because he's over in the.
Yeah,
the
I got that.
There were a lot of movie stars come in. We used to have a placement with all of them listed on it.
I forget.
Do you try to stay cool when they're there, or do you make a big
deal? Yeah, most of them are just normal people.
Oh, I know.
So, I mean, like, I remember, A-Rod was in, and Derek Jeter.
Oh, really?
Derek Jeter was great. He was on the dock eating. This was only a couple of years ago, and, of course, all the girls were, like, swarming around.
Right.
He goes, just let me have my dinner, and then I'll sit and chat with you. But A-Rod was more of a...
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
A-Rod wanted to sit by himself with his four girlfriends. Nonetheless. Which, hey, what the hell?
Is that right?
Yeah, and he had a private dinner, but Jeter was great.
See, that's what I'm wondering. When they show up there, do you guys have to go out of your way to say, let's not make a big deal?
You don't make a big deal.
Because they don't want it.
No, because people want to eat in peace.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they choose this because they just see it's the iconic place to be, or someone told them? I don't know.
You're probably like anywhere else when you go on vacation, don't you ask around?
What's the cool place to go?
Good seafood place.
I mean, I know Aaron Judge has been in, and a couple of the other big guys from they're now up with the Yankees, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And had you just kept at a normal restaurant way back then instead of dumping all that money, that wouldn't be the place. That's how
probably
life
not.
Is.
Yes.
You got to go
sure.
the extra
gotta,
mile.
Exactly.
To,
yep.
If you're not going forward, you're going backwards. You never stay still.
Baby. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. So then your kid's involved now. We're in the 90s. We're in the 2000s. What's happening? Money's good. Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy. You're working hard.
Well, me, Mark, my brother Paul, and my brother Steven. Steven's in charge of all the maintenance there.
Okay.
For us, and my son Ryan runs all the IT.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when did your dad leave the business?
Or semi-retired, 1976, he semi-retired, which he was still doing all our banking and coming over in the mornings and stuff like that. So he was pretty young.
Now
he's retired.
Say.
Now he was still there.
Yeah, he came every day. He would do the banking. He'd do all
the little. Morning
he was the gopher.
O'clock.
You know, if you needed to run for something, my dad was always there to run.
But he
for
wouldn't
stuff.
Try to like boss you around and say, "I want you to do this."
No, he was very happy.
Hands
off.
Oh,
yeah.
my dad was great. He was just probably the most fair boss anyone could ever have. He just
he
absolutely
never, yeah.
super fair.
He had to be very proud that it took it to this level that
yes.
you guys did.
Oh yes,
even in.
When you went to Germany with him?
No, but before then, in his later years, we'd go over to visit him. He'd always ask, "How was business today?"
Is that right?
It was a standing question. How was business today? I find myself doing the same thing to my son.
Me
too.
I see.
How was business today?
My wife said that to me yesterday where she said, "Your whole life was that restaurant. That's your
that
whole
all
life."
All you guys talk about is the restaurant.
Yeah. Like, well, how could it not?
Yes.
Yeah, but was he happy to get out of that complexity? Like, do you think?
Well, you have to remember, he ran everything, hiring, firing.
Yeah, so to
he
not...
worked. He worked as a bartender and a cook in there.
He did every job
all the
in the
bookkeeping,
restaurant.
Did the payroll. He did everything.
So to get out of that is like a relief, right?
Oh, God,
yeah,
yes.
So we slowly took over. My sister Colette did the bookkeeping then. And
for years, yeah.
I did all the seafood buying. Mark did all the liquor buying, ran the bars. I ran the kitchen.
So what about the old, how does the old saying go? All right, first generation starts a business. The second one brings it to its optimum level,
right,
which is you guys. And then the third generation runs it into the ground.
That's not going to happen.
Because it's hard to grow up, not be spoiled. Your parents didn't spoil you guys.
Yeah,
do you
it didn't
say
happen with our kids either.
They're not spoiled?
No, but it is a little different, Mark.
It's different. Yeah, it's
hard. I'm not. Hey, I'm not judging. I'm saying it's got to be impossible. Yeah. I find myself spoiling my kids. I always tell them, "Oh, when I was your age."
Yeah,
it's hard to not do that.
Thing. Yeah,
very true.
But you think it'll continue to infinity?
Our kids don't want to work 7 days a week like we do.
No,
but
my son came out of the Navy. He was a nuclear. He's like a nuclear engineer.
He was a nuclear engineer.
He's working down in Easton now, but he runs long hours, but not the kind of hours we work, and not the weekends that he's got the bennies and all that.
Even my brother Matthew, who worked for us in maintenance for a long time. I remember we had the waterfront down in Pittston, we had Tinks, and then we had Preferred Food Service down here with the old Giant Market.
Yeah, if we can handle that quick, I had a couple questions on it because the Pittston place. What happened there?
Well, we got older, we just sold it. Matter of fact, about a month ago. But we just started downsizing. We had four places, and
oh, you had four. Oh, so you had Tinks.
Cooper's Scranton. We had Cooper's Waterfront in Pittston. We had Tinks Entertainment Complex.
And that was from when?
Tinks was started in 90.
These were all in the 90s, maybe
92 or 93.
Then we renovated that, made it into the multi-level discotheque, all kind of
So would that be the equivalent of like jumping the shark? Like you did too much.
Yeah, then we opened a food service company down on South Washington Avenue back in the early 2000s.
But so did you feel like too much? Pull
too
back.
Much.
Yeah,
yes.
It was way too much. We were burning out, and we were leaving our main place, Scranton and Pittston, and we're running all these other places because you can only run everything.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a lesson learned.
So we sold Tinks.
Tinks?
We wanted to get rid of the nightclub business. That was waning out. Too many lawsuits, drinking and driving type of thing. Got rid of that.
Was Tinks in the 90s?
It was the 90s.
Is that when the skeleton was on the rowboat?
Yeah, so we brought
you
that
did
down,
that?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
I saw Warren Zevon there. Love it.
Oh, yeah.
I remember. I saw
it. We carried that then. We had Mark Hutchke, our guy, make that up in the warehouse in Scranton. One morning, about 4 o'clock, we carried it down North Washington Avenue, brought it over. And installed.
So that was one of your ideas again. It goes, so the Tinks,
well, we were
the Tinks skeleton is tied into the whale. It's
That was like another whole thing. It was going to be a Jekyll and Hyde's pub. You ever hear Jekyll and Hyde's?
Yeah, yep.
We went to Jekyll and Hyde's and we thought, we're going to buy this Tinks and we're going to make it into a Jekyll and Hyde. So that was the beginning thing. But we get into Tinks and we start doing the bands and all of a sudden the money start rolling in and was like, maybe we won't do Jekyll and Hyde. So we bought the pizza place next to it, broke the walls down. We renovated that. Then we bought the, a shirt factory upstairs. We bought that. And we made the three double complex out of it. So, and that was great for a while.
So you got downsized, you're back concentrating on Coopers and Scranton, everything's good. One question I always have, a lot of regular ham and eggers like me, that wonders about guys like you, and I'm just assuming you're doing all right financially. Why not just say, I'm done with everything, I'm going to cash in and live a simple, no-stress life?
I think because we love the business.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to realize, it's Joe, we go over every morning. We go over there at 6 o'clock every morning. We have a little coffee clutch, me, Mark, my brother Paul, my son Ryan, brother Stephen. We sit there for an hour. We chit-chat, have coffee, have a little breakfast.
Makes you feel alive. Makes you feel involved.
And people who work for us have worked for us for like up to 40 years. They're our family. It's a wonderful feeling. I love going to work.
I know, Mark. There's the answer. Yeah, somebody, you love it. Why give it up?
People ask me all the time. Why would you want to leave? You're like 69 years old. I said, are you going to retire? I said, no.
What would we do?
I don't want to.
We'd have to open another restaurant somewhere.
Bruce Springsteen, Paul McCartney, billionaires. Why do they still tour? Why? That's what I love.
Same thing, because it's part of you.
Goodness. I got to ask you a few questions from the viewers before we go. All right? This one I have to set up. Are you ready? Do you guys have crabs? And then they said, pause and watch the grin and chuckle.
There's an old joke about
see
it.
See,
when Mark was in Korea, he told me a story about crabs.
No, we won't go there. I hope someone got that. All right, no. Who decides the music themes for the bathrooms? That's a good question. When you go to a restaurant, there's always bad music playing in the bathrooms.
Oh, we have the Beatles bathroom, which love the Beatles. And me and Mark growing up, we love the Beatles. So how about our story about our Beatle boots we first bought in 1964?
Beatle boots?
My father was very conservative, so Beatle boots look like they're black with a heel on. So we went to Catholic school.
With our own money, of course.
Yeah, we bought $7.99 we paid for them. We hid them out in the bushes, and then as we left, we'd take our regular shoes off, put our Beatle boots on, and go to school because we thought we were cool.
So a little heel on them, you mean?
Little heel, but
and this was considered risque or rebellious.
Yeah, for my father, he thought that would be like womanly-like, you know.
So, I see.
But then we got nervous, and then we finally threw them away because we figured my father might catch us with the Beatle boots.
Isn't that something?
But we love the Beatles, so we created the Beatles
bathroom.
Yeah.
Elvis
in the other bathroom.
So it's Elvis and Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So you just choose that, and let's do it.
And the Beach Boys is in the
and the Beach Boys. Yeah,
with Beach Boys bathroom now too. That's the newest addition.
All right, and what about this? Does he accept the historic Scranton prices? Oh, no, that never mind. Sorry I said that. Pizza soup, is that coming back?
That's a great soup. The fall.
Yeah.
In the fall. That's a heavy one for the summer.
That's a heavy one for the summer?
Yeah.
All right, this one ties into me, and that's why I want to maybe begin the close with this. Will you be having the Gojo kickoff party there this year?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's already planned, and I just want to say...
I know we're coming up to see you.
Yeah, so thanks for your involvement. What made you do that? Just, hey, you know, it's a great thing.
Hey, look, Joe, Scranton's taking care of our whole family. And when we went, Joe Price actually took us up to see Sister Mary Alice up at St. Joe's, and we were there. I mean, we were literally in tears. That place, the people who work there, they are phenomenal.
I know.
You think you're having a bad day? You think something's wrong with your life? Go up there and spend a little time up there and see some of those people that are so, they have such a disability and yet they're happy. Yeah, they're happy. Yeah. You can't come out of there and feel bad about yourself.
Joe, how about what you do for the same thing? Yeah. I mean, we're impressed with you. We love you because of what you do.
That's why the three of us are here now. I know. You guys are in for, over $25,000 last year, another $25,000 this year. So you're just throwing money at St. Joe's. I'll keep doing the bike ride. You keep doing your thing.
But I said, you can't go up there and not feel
it's amazing what they do.
You'd have to be to be completely stone cold dead.
She's my next podcast, by the way, Sister Mary Alice.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's going to be coming up in a couple
weeks. Great lady. Love her.
But, folks, I want to say this about these two gentlemen in front of me. I met them over the years just periodically. You guys are fun. You're honest. You're sincere. There's here's the beauty. There's no pretentiousness. Don't you hate that pretentious person out there?
Yes.
You guys
we ran into a couple of those.
Someone pulled a stick out of their rear end.
Yes.
I think I love you two guys. I mean that. And I appreciate you coming on in. And I can go on for probably another hour with these stories. They're great. But you got to end with something for me. Come on, give me something that people are going to say, Coopers did that, or Coopers had that, or Coopers blank. I don't know.
Well, we're planning more renovations, so we're going to make the whole front of the ship or the restaurant look like a seaport town. That'll start next year.
Mm-hmm. So that's going on.
That's what we planned it already. We have the mock-up stages of that right now.
Is that right?
Yep, that's going to mm-hmm. be something new.
I heard this, that there's you go in there and you're going to press a button, and then a torpedo is going to come out with the waitress popping out, and that's going to deliver your food, too.
Hey, don't laugh. My brother Paul had the idea. Remember having the train deliver food to the tables? There was a restaurant in Kansas City. Now, don't laugh.
They said somebody Paul had to look at it.
My other brother's out to Kansas City to see this. And they were going to do this, but I said, it'll break down too much, so we better not do that.
Yeah. That's funny. So,
yeah.
Well, Jack, great. Mark, I want to thank you for coming in. I love the rich history. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time.
Thanks,
and
Joe.
Thanks for the St. Joe's collaboration.
Thank you.
And the bike ride collaboration.
Thank you, Joe.
And
yeah.
I'm not just saying this. I love you guys. I love you.
Same here, Joe.
Feelings mutual.
You guys are
the
great.
Here.
And the birthday thing, everyone still comes by for that free birthday meal, right?
They sure do.
That's got to be
it. It's been a great pop. You know, the sincerest form of flattery is imitation, and there's a lot of imitators.
Oh, I know. You guys probably started it, right?
We did, yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to say your original name here, and then we're going to end. What is it now?
Coopers.
Mm-hmm. Coopers. Peace out, Coopers.
Cheers.
Curiosity. What are you so curious about?
Everything.
Mr. Curiosity.